Bob Dylan almost wrote a song about the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that sometimes speaks in tongues. He attended 3 Beatles concerts full of screaming girls and lived to tell the tale. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, it is Medicare for the Energetic Man podcast. And why would it not be Medicare for the Lazy Man, you might ask? It's because I am energetic. I am buzzed. I'm jazzed. I'm so glad to be here, and I'm so glad to have our audience here with us. Frankly, I had such a fantastic day that I'm going to spend the day bragging about it. I'm going to spend this episode bragging about it. But the first thing I'm going to do, because I'm in such a great mood, is I'm going to ask if Randy will play our 30-second radio spot. And if he would just do that now, let's listen carefully. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Oh, boy, I love to hear that spot. Randy and I worked hard on that, and we got a radio station involved, and they helped out. And it tells the story in 30 seconds that it takes me half an hour, 40 minutes sometimes to tell. And I'm not even sure I do it as well as it gets told in that 30 seconds. But thank you for sticking with me. We're here to help your transition into Medicare be an easy one and a painless one, and hopefully maybe a little bit of fun, but more confident and relaxing and not tense and frightening. So that's the whole point of us being here. And to that end, I have written a book every year for the last 4 years entitled Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. The 2021 edition is out now. If you go to Amazon and search for Medicare for the Lazy Man, you're going to see an older edition that says 2019. You're going to see an older edition that says 2020. You're going to see the newest edition that has a red 2021 on the cover. And you're going to see a paperback, which used to be priced at $14. And then I thought, hey, who needs color? So I had them black and white, all of the beautiful color illustrations in the book. And we got that price down to $8, and it's flying off the shelves. So I'm thinking that that was a popular move. People don't want to pay $6 to have a colorful book. And frankly, if enough people tell me that they want to pay for 14 instead of eight, I'll bring back the color version. I'm a prostitute. No, I'm not a prostitute, but I'm certainly, I understand the value of a dollar. And the other thing is there is an ebook or a Kindle version that's waiting for you to buy if you want to do that. That's $3.80. And on January 21st, I was able to put the Audible version of this book onto their files to get them to listen to it carefully and prepare it for sale. And they said, okay, you're in line. We're taking the, you know, you're number 842, serving number 2. And so we... from January 21st, we're still waiting. And it's frustrating that every day I go and look and every day that book is still not on sale. So a week or so ago, I wrote them and I said, can you tell me if my book is still in line and will it be ready for sale? And they wrote me back and they said, we understand your question is about your Audible book. Please rest assured that it is an Audible book. And so I wrote back and I said, what does that mean? And they said, well, it's in line and it'll be taken care of and put on sale when we're ready, not before. So stop bothering us. And that was the thing I got from Amazon's ACX subsidiary that does the Audible book. So one day you'll be able to hear these dulcet tones anytime you want by just buying the Audible book, which I think is going to be, I don't have anything to do with the pricing on that. So I think it's going to be fairly attractively priced. And also, in addition to all those wonderful things, we have another wonderful thing, and that is Randy Carson, the podcast engineer. How are you, Randy?
I'm good. But I do have to tell the audience, when Doug entered the studio.
Are you sure we should be doing this?
Oh, sure. All yeah, right. This is when Doug entered the studio today. He was literally dancing. He was so happy. He had a great day yesterday. We haven't yet heard why, but I literally had to talk him down from the ceiling to sit him in front of his mic.
That was a fairly lengthy process because during the course of him talking me down from the ceiling, we had an in-depth discussion about elevators and the types of elevators, about mid-century modern architecture in Phoenix and three or four other weird topics of conversation that we hit on. And I keep telling you, you know, if we record those, then we should maybe start a separate podcast, just the musings of Randy and Doug or something. Doesn't that sound fascinating? I'm sure the sponsors would be lined up at the doorway for that.
We could actually start an entirely separate podcast called Medicare for the Lazy Man Behind the Scenes.
This is what goes on when the mics are off.
That's right.
We'll have the mics on. And I'm not sure I could afford all of the audio tape that it would require to record our lengthy conversations, our musings and our random thoughts and our sometimes pithy thought processes that when we strike genius, when we strike gold, can we maybe market that? Is there a way to?
Oh, I think so. If nothing else, we can actually take it down the road of being a retro podcast that's being recorded on 3M tape.
Well, that's my favorite medium. It always was. I grew up with 3M tape and quarter inch, I guess it is. And I would save a lot of money while enjoying British invasion music by borrowing albums from the people I knew and recording them on my own tape. The only problem with having giant 7-inch reels of tape, if you wanted to listen to one song, boy, it took you hours to find that sucker if you had the right reel.
Yeah, and if you had noted down on, they used to have what, cardboard sleeves that went over those big reels. Yeah. If you noted down on the back on the index page or whatever it was, you know, that at 4:35, you know, this particular song started.
The problem there was if you played it on a different machine, the counter worked differently. So you wound up with, so I would just, you know, put the tape in and just start it cranking and let it run. And occasionally I would be winding up, rewinding and listening to a song over and over again, trying to imprint it into my brain so that I would have it, you know, permanently etched in my mental cavity. But that didn't always work.
Well, there was one song that I literally cannot name the name of this song. Otherwise, it will occupy my brain for the next 3 weeks before I can get rid of it again. But there were songs like that when I was a kid that I just listened to over and over and over. And there was because I was a musician back then, still am, but I'm not active. I used to think, what is it about a particular song that just hooks you so hard that you can't get rid of it out of your head?
Is that a question for me, or is that?
Yeah. How would you answer that question?
Well, as a, I always wanted to be a musician, but I became a psychologist, at least for the purposes of getting through college. And my answer to that would be that it's different for everybody because there are songs that other people hate that I love. Some people can't stand certain songs that I like very much. I like, if I'm in my garage with a bunch of friends, we're working on a car or something, and a song that I really love comes on, somebody's going to go, holy crap, who recorded this piece of garbage? And so I don't think it's the kind of thing that you can say that there is one thing that makes a song good. It's one thing for you, but it might be an entirely different thing for me.
You know, it's interesting, and I think you're absolutely right. But for me, what it is that grabs me is it's a combination of the percussion, the beat, the other part that there's certain chords that just go right to my brain.
I love the percussion. I would have to say that unlike most people, the very least important part of any song to me, the part I care least about, is the lyrics. I almost never give a crap what the lyrics are. They could change the lyrics to, you know, I like Russia and I hate America and all that stuff. And I would not care that much because it's the music, the percussion, the chords and all that stuff that really draw me to a song. It's rare when I like the lyrics of a song.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I grew up being a musician, but not a singer. So when I listen to a song, it's almost like my brain is programmed to filter out the lyrics.
Right, right.
I can't tell you what the lyrics are to, you know, 99.9% of the songs I listen to.
But yet some people put all of their faith and love in a lyrical song that says what they think it speaks to them. And I think a lot of those people are teenage girls, you know. They eventually grow up. But.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, the Monkees. I think the Monkees spoke to a lot of teenage girls.
But you know something? I was a teenage boy back then, and frankly, I am now nostalgic. So on my 4,000 song iPod, favorites list, I have a bunch of Monkees songs and songs by other groups that you know, we would turn our noses up because they're nostalgic to me.
Yeah.
And in fact, some of those Monkees songs that were top 40 hits that the teenage girls were screaming about, some of those songs were written by journeyman songwriters who were actually deeper than one might think, but they wrote these things because they needed to eat.
Yes. Yes. Would you write me a song if I pay you $1,000? You betcha. Yeah.
How soon do you want it? I can have it for you in 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, I think we should move on to you telling us about Doug's extraordinary day, because I know it has some relationship to why you were so bouncy coming into the studio.
I had a really unusual day, actually last couple of days. And this is kind of an experiment because normally I try to prepare some content in advance so that the audience for the podcast doesn't feel cheated. And I'm hoping they don't feel cheated at the end of this, but here's what a salesman goes through. When a salesman has a product to sell or a service, they hope that it will be attractive to other potential customers and that at least there'll be enough interest in it that he'll know he's not wasting his time. And that's not always the case. I had two and a half years in Chicago as the Midwest regional manager for a big, big California insurance company. And through various internal workings, they made sure the one department had some control over my department's pricing. And so they made sure that the product that I sold was overpriced and that every competitor working in the upper end of the market could undercut my price and make themselves more attractive. I sat there like the Maytag repairman for 2.5 years in a beautiful, spacious office with a hyperactive secretary who kept asking me, "What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?" Well, find a customer, you know. And this was the most miserable 2.5 years of my life because I had everything going for me. I had a great salary, I had a great bonus structure, I had a great company, I had a great product. But yet I look like a complete failure because no matter how hard I tried to sell the thing, I was always deeply undercut by the competitors and it just was very unpleasant. So flash forward to over the weekend, we get a whole bunch of refugees that have formed a cohesive group and we all get together every once in a while, ignoring any sort of stupid mask mandates, by the way, and or 6-foot distancing. So we all got together in Fountain Hills for a few hours even though it was freezing cold outside. And one of the problems, one of my good friends who lives very close to Randy was having with his 66 Impala was that he needed to change the motor mounts. And it can be kind of an awkward task. And he had worked on it for hours by himself and failed to successfully put his new motor mounts in. And so a mutual friend of ours that was part of this big group said, well, I'll come over and help you. And I said, I will too. Whenever Jim shows up, you let me know and I will come down there. As I said, lives close to Randy. So he's like just a couple of miles away. So I get a text at like 7 o'clock in the morning. Can you believe it? Jim is here already. So come over, let's get working. Oh my God. And here was what happened. What happened at the same time? I started getting emails from potential customers and people that I had contacted in months past who seemed as though they needed my assistance getting into Medicare. And all of a sudden, they just dropped off the face of the earth. And I've had a couple of episodes where I've mentioned, I've read communications from people who seem very sincere about needing my services. And then they wind up asking me to go buy them an iTunes gift card for their niece or whatever. And so anyway, now here I am. All of a sudden, I get up in the morning. I'm looking at a series of emails and I'm thinking, boy, I got enough important stuff to do to keep me busy until noon. But yet Roy, my friend, has said that Jim is over there and those two guys are working on the project that they need my help on. Roy spent a large chunk of one day on it and failed. Roy and Jim together spent a large chunk of time on it on a different day and failed to successfully do it. And so they thought with my help, six hands are better than two or whatever. So I knew it was my responsibility to go over there and help them out as soon as I could. So I got over there much later than most people would think was responsible. And when I pulled up in front of Roy's garage, they were just finishing up. It had somehow something clicked and it had gone very, very smoothly. So I didn't disappoint Roy. I let him know that I'm there for him when he needs me. But all I could think about was all of a sudden I've got a bunch of interest in my service and my products here for Medicare eligible people. And so I turned around, drove right home and spent the rest of the day trying to satisfy the demand from customers who have all of a sudden, all at the same time, decided that they need my help in applying for Medicare supplement plans. And I made a list here because I didn't want to forget anybody. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 people. Now I got about three of them taken care of. We have an avid listener named Becky who lives in Texas, in Houston. And she and her husband are early starters. They need Medicare coverage by June. And I've spent a lot of time with them. And recently, Becky asked me to do some research on a competing product. It's not always something that's very rewarding to do, but I told her, look, I'll be happy to do that because you have been a wonderful person to deal with. And all of a sudden, I am now too busy to help Becky in the way that I had promised. So I know she listens to this podcast and I'm hoping that she'll recognize herself and understand that all of a sudden I have an abundance of an embarrassment of riches that I'll be dealing with for the next few days so that people who aren't as far sighted as Becky and her husband are, people who need more immediate help, like they need their insurance coverage to be effective the 1st of April. A few of these people have thought ahead enough that May 1st is their target date, but almost nobody thinks 3 months ahead. Very, very few people have that sort of foresight or are that OCD, if that applies. Some people say, I got to get ready a year ahead of time, but that's a rare breed. And so basically what happened is I'm sitting here looking at a list of names of people that I have to help. Otherwise, I will have disappointed them. Some of them contacted me months ago and then decided that it could be tabled for a while. One of them two of them are wives of former clients, people that I helped in years past. And they had younger wives, and all of a sudden the wives are now approaching their 65th birthday. And so that's how a salesman gets repeat business, does a good job for someone. And they say, hey, there's nowhere else I'm going to go, because that's a dependable, reliable service. And frankly, the interaction is painless, and the jokes are sometimes funny. You know, I try to, I'm kind of a smart ass, and every once in a while I come up with a smart ass remark that entertains people. Other people are less entertained and more businesslike, but I've got a good friend who's on this list. She's a friend of mine because she's a real estate agent in a local, very large, highly prominent agency owned by a guy who's been dead for years. I don't know how many years he's been dead, but about a year ago, the company, whoever runs the real estate agency now, even under the old name, took away the medical plan, the group medical plan, from all of the agents, and they all became independent contractors, and they all had to go on COBRA. Now, COBRA coverage, as some of you may know, is very expensive. And so I learned about this a year ago, but now their COBRA plans are starting to run out, and the people are kind of desperately looking for answers. In other words, how can I get individual insurance to cover me? And they're all, the ones I'm dealing with are from 60 to 62, 63. And they're really panicking because they're old enough that the premiums for regular medical insurance are kind of high. And the deductibles are also very high in an effort to keep the premiums down. So what did I discover? A product that didn't exist under Obamacare, but when the Republicans managed to retake the legislature, the House and the Senate a few years ago, they allowed a product to be introduced into the health insurance marketplace that's called short-term or temporary medical insurance. And it is much more reasonably priced. And for people who are healthy and who have a reasonable expectation of staying healthy, but they're not yet 65, so they cannot enjoy the excellent coverage and protection of Medicare, this coverage is designed for them. You can have it for as little as like $250 a month, but that's kind of skimpy coverage, like maybe $100,000 maximum benefit if something bad happens to you. The plan can last anywhere up to 364 days. It can be renewed, but it basically is an inexpensive way to dodge all of the onerous, the just heavy-handed Obamacare regulations that drive the cost sky high. For instance, these people are in their 60s. They don't need maternity coverage, yet Obamacare coverage forces them to pay extra for maternity coverage and dental coverage and a bunch of other stuff in order to satisfy the lawyers. Well, this plan, this type of product is a lot less expensive because it was designed to avoid those sorts of things. But once again, it's temporary. It won't cover your pre-existing conditions. It doesn't have an unlimited upper limit on your maximum benefit. It might be as low as $1 million instead of unlimited. On the other hand, it's affordable health insurance. And so it fills a niche. And all of these real estate agents are sick of being bled dry by Obamacare plans that, frankly, they're paying for stuff that nobody's ever going to need, thousands and thousands of dollars a month. And the richest plan they can find is a plan with maybe a $5,000 deductible. So what am I doing? All of a sudden, I have several people on this list that have been led to me by my friend, the real estate agent, because these people all understand, hey, we're going to turn 65 in a few years, and then we'll be on Medicare, and it'll be excellent coverage, excellent protection at a reasonable cost. So until then, we're going to have to roll the dice, because the insurance marketplace has been changed in a bad way. It's been twisted. It's been perverted to, I don't know to whose benefit, but nobody's making a ton of money. except maybe lawyers on current Obamacare. So out of these 12 people on my list, I've got three people to help get temporary health insurance plans because they're not quite old enough for Medicare. And the product I'm using is called Bridge to Medicare. It's designed to attract the attention of people who are in people who are in their 60s. But are not quite ready for Medicare yet. So I've got 12 friends. I've got 12 almost like orphans that I've adopted. I can put my arms around them and squeeze and tell them I love them because they made yesterday a fantastic day for me. I have 12 prospects that want my assistance and that want my products, and I couldn't be happier about that. So that's the short version of my excellent day yesterday, Doug's excellent adventure.
That's great. I'm really glad to hear that. So I got a question. I always have questions.
I know you do, and I like your questions.
So, oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I just wondered how much time we had burned up.
Oh, well, we're out. But
not a problem.
The crickets went while you were discussing that. But I do have one short question.
Yes, sir.
What is the earliest age that someone could go on a plan like short-term coverage?
Those plans are available to anybody. However, the younger the person is, the less the difference in cost is. So, in other words, if you're older, then your Obamacare plan is going to cost you maybe an arm and a leg. Whereas if you're younger, probably a few fingers would be what it would cost you.
Well, in my case, you know my situation.
I do know your situation. And you know something? This is a fairly new product to me. I wasn't aware of it the last time we were talking about things like this. But the other thing you have to remember is not comprehensive coverage with an unlimited maximum benefit. And so I have to make sure that my clients understand that there's some risk here. They're rolling the dice on getting a disease or something that, while they're covered by this. And I know where you're going.
When we drag out the next Guinness in the Carson pub, let's have this discussion over a couple Guinness.
Well, I'd be happy to do that. And all I really have to do is give you a link, because this is a kind of a thing that's a self-education thing. I give you a link. I give you a username, which is my secret, super-duper secret number. And one would go to that site and poke around and look at the offerings and compare that to what they're paying now for a company they absolutely they detest. And then they might say, hey, I'd like to pull the trigger on this. So I will be happy to give you that link.
Well, let's put that on the list for our next pub session.
Okay.
But up until then, the crickets have called their time out.
Well, then I should stop talking about how great my business went yesterday. I'm basking in the glow of a successful day. Every salesman wants to have too much demand for their product, and I just had a day like that, and I'm so happy about it.
I got to tell you one short story about a cousin of mine. Has been in the sales business his entire life, sold different things, but he literally is one of these guys like you that could sell snow to Eskimos. Mm. And he cannot sit still. He has to sell. So he's retired now, and he said, I'm going to retire. And they go, oh yeah, wait, as soon as this guy retires, you know, I'll really mark that date down on the calendar. But anyway, long story short is, he used to sell multi-million dollar Harvestor silo setups, if you know what Harvestor
is. I always wondered, hell yes, I always wondered where those came from.
Well, they came from my cousin.
No kidding. Now, do you make $1 million on each silo?
Each one of those little blue cylinder-looking things.
Yeah.
Depends on how many you can have, or how many you have, how tall they are, what kind of interconnected equipment you've got between them.
Sure.
You can easily bark up on $1 million.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do farmers not have any sense of balance or propriety? Why do they get different sizes all the time? I understand a business reason for that, But my God, if you're going to have three silos, do they have to all be different sizes? Can't you line them up and make them all the same size, make them look good?
Well, that actually is something that I would prefer. But the different sizes, I think, are for different purposes, different crops, those kind of things. You know, so but I'm not the expert on that. But long story short, is his name, my cousin's name is Richard. And he
let me guess, Richard Carson?
No, actually, it's not Carson. He's from the other side of the family. And his name is Richard M. We'll go so far as to say that.
All right.
But he had a saying that he used to use quite often. He said, "I can always tell whether a fellow I hire is going to make a salesman or not." He'd bring in somebody off the street and say, "You want to be a salesperson? I'll teach you." And he'd say, "I always know if somebody's going to make a salesperson or not." And I'd say, "How's that?" And he goes, "Because they would call me if they closed a deal early in the morning, like 9 o'clock over a coffee shop session." Uh-huh. They'd call him up and say, "Hey, I closed a deal on a $30,000, you know, blue cylinder." Yeah. And he'd say, "Well, that's great. That's great." And then he'd drive around town and see him in the coffee shop the rest of the day. He'd say, "If a guy's going to be a good salesman, as soon as he closes a deal at 9 o'clock in the morning, you go back to selling."
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And you know something, this is another reason I mentioned my grandfather and how he died when I was 16. Just, he fell asleep in a company convention. He was with the John Hancock from 1920 when he graduated from college until the day he died. And he fell asleep at a company convention in Canada with his hands both occupied. One hand was gently holding my grandmother's hand. They were sitting at a cocktail party session. And the other hand had a big old highball glass in it.
he was
working on. And he just went to sleep because he was always falling asleep at inappropriate times. And then he died right there. But he was famous for seeing the abilities in people and giving them a new direction to their sales career. And he built several multi-million dollar insurance agencies by virtue of his instinctive appreciation of the skills that he saw in some other people. Not everyone, but he could pick them out. He could find them. He could motivate them. And if they didn't work out for one reason or another, he would help them on to another type of job where they might be more, you know, happy. And that's what you're describing there is a rare quality in people.
Well, you know, your grandpa, having the ability and the desire and the understanding that not everybody's a salesman and helping them on to a better career that would fit them, that there is a gentleman.
Well, he knew that they would always be a friend, and it was up to him to make sure that their families weren't disrupted. If he lured them into the insurance business by explaining how great it could be if they succeed, and if it began to look like they couldn't succeed, that impacted their families too, not just those people. And nobody was helped by having a failure. And so it was his job to make sure that his actions did not negatively impact their families. And so he would guide them on to another career.
As a friend of mine back in Nebraska used to say, "There is a gentleman and a scholar."
Well, yeah, he died too soon. I'm like almost, I'm 9 years older than he was when he croaked. And I don't know when my clock is going to stop ticking, but it's a little on the scary side because my father was only 3 years older than he was. Now, this guy was my mother's father.
Yeah.
And my father's father dropped dead at age 54. My mother's father, the guy we've been talking about, was 64. My father dropped dead raking leaves at age 67. And here I am, much older than that. I keep hearing my biological clock.
There's a story that there's a commonality there that you really ought to pay attention to, Doug.
I mean, I haven't even mentioned all the relatives that died before these guys did. I mean,
don't rake leaves. Never rake leaves. Stay out of your yard. Never rake leaves.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. It started when I was a little kid. I was like beaten with sticks to get out there and rake those leaves. And if I had been able to tell my father, no, this is going to lead to death, premature death.
That's right. That's
right. We would have had guys raking the leaves for us, I'm sure.
Oh, my God. Thank you for telling us about that wonderful day. I enjoyed every bit of it. Thank everybody in the audience for being with us. It's been a great, fun time today. And we always look forward to seeing you today. And we'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow or the next day. But up until then, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and the sole proprietor of Medicare for the Lazy
Here's
Man.
Here's where I have to sneak off and take a nap, because he'll be at this
com.
For a while.
I have several more I can put in there, but just for today, we'll just let him know that you are also the CEO and head pilot of MLM Air.
Okay, that ought to do it for today. We've bored them with our personal opinions, but thank you for joining us, and come on back real soon, will you?